So, just happens that we have one of those ladies that everybody loves because she's so cute. No, because she's so
magnificent.
And she is so crazy. Oh. I'm sorry. I think I said the wrong word. What was that word again, young lady?
Radiant.
What did you say?
Radiant.
What did she say, honey?
Radiant.
She's so raining. Raining words of truth and wisdom. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, she is radiant. She's absolutely wonderful. She's somebody I've loved for a lot of years. And it's our Lindy. Yay.
Well, my printer didn't work. So I took a page out of Connie Ferris's book and brought my netbook. But I forgot to download the email that I sent to myself. And then I walked away because I had my netbook without the piece of paper I had notes on. Good thing I know what I'm talking about. I'm going to share some of my favorite stories with you tonight in the context of what we can be in the new year that will make our lives better. And if you've heard them before, think of them as Mozart symphonies and listen to them again with a new set of ears. My faux pas of this evening fall into the category of oops, but there's the story of the farmer whose mule went oops quite a lot, and the farmer finally got tired of it. And he said, I'm going to bury that mule alive in the well. And he pushed the mule into the well. And then he started shoveling dirt and rocks in on top of it. Well, the mule was no fool. And he shook it off and stepped up. And the farmer shoveled more dirt and rocks, and the mule shook it off and stepped up. And the farmer shoveled more dirt and rocks, and the mule shook it off and stepped up. And guess what happened? The mule walked out of the well. That's resiliency, or resilience, depending upon how you want to pronounce, what word you want to use. Resilience, the art of being knocked down and bouncing back up anyway. If we can all be resilient in 2012, then we will have a happier, easier life. Yes, we'll be knocked down, but everybody gets knocked down. It's the people who can get back up and keep going that are succeeding in life and that are enjoying life. So when you get knocked down, think of that mule and shake it off and step up. Now, another favorite characteristic of mine is balance. It's a favorite characteristic because I have so little of it. But I affirm that I live a healthy, balanced life. And when I think of balance, the image that comes to mind is that of the balance beam in the Olympic gymnastics competition. Life is like walking on the balance beam and performing those acrobatics that the gymnasts perform. The balance beam is 4 feet off the ground, 4 inches wide, and 16 feet long. And I had in my notes the moves that Nadia Comaneci created, that she was the first to perform on the balance beam. Nadia Comaneci won the Olympic gold medal in 1976 in Montreal. She won again in 1980 in Moscow. We were not there in 1980. We were not being resilient. Anyway, Nadia Comaneci is remembered for many things, but most importantly, During the course of winning the gold medal in 1976, she captured the first perfect 10 in any Olympic gymnastics competition to that date. And it was in the parallel, uneven parallel bars where they fly like birds and land like angels. And her balance beam routine captured a gold medal also. And she won the all-around best athlete in gymnastics for women at the 1976 Olympics. Now, I find it interesting that in Wikipedia, it says that the balance beam is both an apparatus and an event in which the apparatus is used, and that only female gymnasts perform this event. Male gymnasts do not perform it for fear of injury. Female gymnasts are too stupid to understand that there is a risk of injury. This Wikipedia article was obviously written by a man. Or maybe it was a dig at the men for being too afraid of injury to try the balance beam, written by a woman. But it was quite entertaining reading anyway. Now, Romania, just to conclude the Wikipedia thought, Romania had 4 straight Olympics with gold medal winning gymnasts in the women's side from 1974 to 1984, or something like that. And the U.S. in the last 40 years of women's gymnastics has had 6 medals, 2 gold, 2 silver, and 2 bronze. Most recently, a gold and a silver and an all-around at the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. You think I can't remember the names of the people, but it was Sean Johnson and Nastia Lukin. Nastia Lukin won the all-around, and Sean Johnson won the gold in the balance beam. So there. Look it up. It's in Wikipedia. But balance is something that the metaphor of a balance beam works really well for in life, because each of us has to walk a narrow tightrope between falling and succeeding. And sometimes we fall off the balance beam, and it's very difficult sometimes to get back on. That's where that shake it off and step up comes in. And we don't have to do double twisting dismounts to be successful. We don't have to be Nadia Comaneci. We can be ourselves and find our own way of balancing between good and evil, between positivity and negativity, between joy and sadness. Life is about duality. And if we can find the middle ground, we can be so much happier in 2012. We can't do it by ourselves. We need each other. And we need cooperation. And my favorite story about cooperation is from the children's book Paddle to the Sea, published in the 1940s. I read it in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was a child in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And it's a story of a young Canadian boy who carves a man in a canoe and puts, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea," and sets it on the mountainside by the snow melt that will run into the Great Lakes, and from the Great Lakes into the St. Lawrence Seaway, and from the St. Lawrence Seaway into the Atlantic Ocean. And for those of you who have heard me tell this story before, we all know that Paddle to the Sea had many adventures along the way. But he, in fact, indeed did end up in France across the Atlantic Ocean by right of cooperation from everyone who encountered him. He was about to be sawed in half at the log mill, at the lumber mill, and the saw operator stopped the saw, saved Paddle to the Sea, and then started cutting the log again. And he read on the bottom, "Please put me back in the water," and he did so. We all need another person or another family or another army or another band or another orchestra. The bigger the symphony, the better the music. We all need someone like Paddle did to put us back in the water, for we are all paddling to the Sea of God, and we can't get there alone. A wise man once said, "Life is a 1.5-person job. And he's right. If you think about it, maybe we don't need 100% of another person's time, but when we're reaching for the cereal in the top of the cupboard, we sure need a spotter. I don't reach for cereal in the top of the cupboard anymore. I call a child. Yes. I can lift somebody up if they're a 40-pound somebody, but I can't lift myself up, and neither can they. So it's important to know who is the one and who is the half in any given moment, but the whole point is that we need to cooperate with each other and help each other out and be there for each other and raise each other up. And if we do that in the new year, we'll be happier and healthier and more balanced and more resilient. And hopefully we'll be aware of where we are and why we are there and what the world holds for us and what God holds for us in that space in which we are. And that brings to my mind the story of David and the golden windows. David is the name of an 8-year-old boy in this story, and why he's named David, I don't know, but that's the way I learned the story, and I like it that way. David lived in a house high up on the hill of the side of the valley, and every morning he got up and he looked out his windows, and he saw the windows on the far side of the valley were golden in the morning sun. And David wasn't miserable, he wasn't abused, he was just mildly disenchanted with his life and family, somewhat similar to me when I was 8 years old. I was at a wedding, and I was eating at the table, and this couple whom I had never met came up to me and said, "Would you like to go home with us?" And I thought about it for at least a nanosecond, and I said, "Yes, please," only to be disappointed and find out they meant driving their car home to my house. They were going to be having dinner at our house after the reception. Darn it. And it turned out they had 6 kids and were Democrats and had all kinds of good times. My family had half as many kids and half as many political brains. Naming no names. But David lived on this hill. He was sort of unhappy, and he would have said yes if somebody would have asked him, did he want to go home with him? So one morning he decided that he would walk over to the houses with the golden windows and see what it was like to visit there. So he set off on his journey. He packed a backpack of sodas and ding-dongs and set off a long walk across the valley. And by the time he got to the other side and to the houses that had the golden windows in the morning, the sun had traveled across the sky. And as he looked at the houses that he had seen that morning with golden windows, they looked like ordinary glass. And disappointed, he turned to go home, and he saw that his own home had golden windows in the afternoon sun. So can we be aware of where we are and aware of what we want out of that? And can we find it where we are without having to journey across the valley only to be disappointed by ordinary glass? Can we realize that our houses have golden windows as well? The grass is greener where you water it. It's not greener on the other side of the fence unless you water it there. So let's think about, be aware of where we are and what is going on around us. And while we're thinking about awareness, let's give it our best shot. Let's be our best self. Let's be like the little boy who was late coming home from school, and his mother was away out looking for him because there was a storm coming, and it was crackling with lightning and thunder. And she looked down the street and she saw her son, and every so often, the lightning would crack and the thunder would roar, and he'd stop and he'd look up and smile. And finally he made his way to the front porch, and she said, What are you doing? He said, "God keeps taking my picture. I'm smiling for the camera." You know what? God is always taking our picture. Not just at the photo-enforced intersections. God is always taking our picture. Why aren't we smiling? Why aren't we giving it our best shot? Why aren't we being our best self? Why are we moping around? Well, like today, I didn't get out of my pajamas. That's why I was late. I didn't want to get out of my pajamas. But I have somewhere to go. I have the world to go to. I have a day to live in. And if I stay in my pajamas and don't live in it, it's never coming around again. So smile, because you never know when God's going to take your picture.
Yeah.
And that same little boy tells us to be careful about what we expect, to expect only the best. Because he decided one day not to walk home smiling for God, but to actually leave home and see if he could find God. So he told his mom he was going hiking and he was looking for God. And he packed some Twinkies and root beer and headed off on his walk. Now, he's a young man, so his legs are short, and it only took him about a block and a half to get to where he thought he should be. And he saw an old lady on a park bench, and he sat down next to her. And she smiled at him, and he smiled at her. And he offered to share his root beer and Twinkies, and she accepted graciously. And they shared Twinkies and root beer during the rest of the morning. And as the afternoon came, he decided he probably ought to go home. And there weren't any more Twinkies than root beer. So he smiled at the lady, and she smiled at him, and they hugged each other. And it was a very special hug. And they each went their separate ways. And when he got home, his mom said, "Where have you been?" And he said, "I went to the park to meet God." And you know, she's got the greatest smile, and she hugs wonderfully. Uh-huh. And when the elderly lady got home, her son, with whom she lived, said, "Hi, Mom, you look brighter today than usual. Where have you been? What have you been up to?" And she said, "I was in the park having cookies and having Twinkies and root beer with God." Uh-huh. And you know what? He's a lot younger than I thought. Be careful that your expectations don't color your world brown. Because if she hadn't expected to meet God in an 8-year-old body, and if he hadn't expected to meet God in an 80-year-old body, maybe they both would have missed God. Maybe we're missing God every time we turn away from somebody or ignore someone who wants our attention, be they 8 or 80. I'm the 8-year-old, in case anybody was wondering. So let's be our best expectors and expect greatness and magnificence from the world, because what we expect, we will see. Believing is seeing, as they say. We manifest our own world, and if we expect to see God in each individual that we encounter, we will do so. Well, look, my time is up. I want to leave you with a story, but I can't think of another one right now. So let me tell you a little story that has the merit of being my own. And that is that I started collecting stories when I was about 12 years old. And every story that I've told you tonight has come my way in the form of the internet, or before the internet, Reader's Digest, or before Reader's Digest, quotable quotes, Art Link letter, any number of sources of stories. Oh, I just thought of the story I want to end on. And it was the first one I collected besides the Golden Windows. But each story has become richer and richer and deeper in meaning to me as I share them with people around churches and Toastmasters for 15 years. And I have come to live my life out of my stories. I try to be resilient. I try to be cooperative. I try to be expecting goodness. I try to be smiling for God. I try to shake it off and step up. And as I try to be and do these many things, surprisingly, I am doing and being these things. Maybe not so surprisingly. So I would encourage you to find your own stories. I'm happy to share mine with you, and you can take them as your own should you decide you want to. But collect stories that are meaningful to you. And every story has a heart. Oh, I know the one I missed. I missed it the last talk I gave, so I'll save it for the next talk I give. No, I'll tell you. Be generous. Be generous of heart. And that's the story of the young boy who went into the coffee shop and he had 50 cents. And he said to the waitress, "How much is a hot fudge sundae?" And she said, 45 cents. Plus tax, 49 cents. It was the good old days. And he said, "How much is a single scoop of ice cream?" And she said, 35 cents, including tax. And he ordered the single scoop of ice cream. And she thought he was penny pinching until she came back and found that he had paid 35 cents for the ice cream and left her a 15 cent tip. If we can be that generous of spirit, then we can change the world, because generosity is at the core of love. If we are loving, we can't help but be generous. And if we're generous, we can't help but find love. So find your own stories. Seek them out. Notice them when you come across them. Save them and see how they relate to you, or if they relate to you. Stories are a wonderful gift, and hopefully you've enjoyed mine. I will leave you with one short story. Things are not always as they seem. A little girl said to her daddy, "Daddy, why do they say 1 and 1 always equals 2? And daddy said, "Because it does." And she said, "No, it doesn't. 1 raindrop plus 1 raindrop equals a puddle." So use our imaginations, enjoy stories, and live these principles in the new year, and we'll all be happier and more balanced and more resilient and more joyful and more expecting good. And God bless you all. Thank you.